This is the Toronto Today podcast. I'm your host, Greg Brady.
640 Toronto presents Think Tank, the breaking stories you care about, facts and opinions that get you through the day. Now, let's meet the guests.
Okay, like this lineup for Think Tank, we run it all the way till top of the hour at 10 o'clock. You can hear the Roy Green Show coast to coast, wherever you are in Canada. You need an AM radio or an internet connection. If you got both, even better. Roy Green is host of the Roy Green Show, 2 to 5 tomorrow afternoon, 2 to 5 Eastern time on Sunday afternoon. Roy, love having you on. I love our Friday visits. Thanks for the time.
Yeah, me too, Greg. Thank you. Good morning.
Ben Mulrooney, our guest, 640 Toronto contributor. And soon, do you want to tell the audience that you and I are going to, we're getting co-opted to do a workout together? I don't think you and I are the next Hans and Franz, Ben, but you never know.
Absolutely. Not with my knees and my back. Absolutely not. But I'm going to do my best.
Yeah, they'd be taking one joint from you, one from me, and then we'd need a lot of other alpha males to contribute for us to get through some of these things.
Correct. I'm looking forward to it.
Eric Lombardi, to be young again, founder of More Neighbors Toronto, joins us on Toronto Today. How are your hips and knees? A question I don't ask every male guest, but how are you doing this morning?
You know, I actually just turned 30, so deteriorating.
You've got three angry men ready to come at you, Eric, for that. That was a humble brag at best. Humble brag at best is what that was. All right, let me start with Ben on this front. U of T with an encampment. I drove by it this morning. Peaceful. They're all sleeping in their tents. Ben, it's like a KOA campground with a proper 11 o'clock curfew, and there could be movies and marshmallows tonight. I'm not sure. But in all seriousness, protesters were told they had to be out by 10. The university looks like they're capitulating, and we saw what transpired in the States. I don't want to see that level of violence. I don't want to see that level of vitriol. I don't want students getting hurt either. But everybody that's talked to me about this, Ben, says this is not a student encampment. There's professional protesters. There's grownups. There's the same people we see and we've seen on the streets of Toronto for the last 7 months, and they've taken over these proceedings.
Firstly, we have been bending over backwards with every description of these encampments everywhere as referring to them as mostly peaceful. And frankly, I'm getting a little tired of it, but that's a separate issue. Look, we had an issue with this on the streets of Toronto where we kept asking, why are the cops not enforcing the law? And the answer was, well, they don't want to escalate things. And that logic doesn't work, because if you don't escalate, if the cops don't escalate, the protesters will. If you tell them that you are toothless in your enforcement, they will take the next step. It's the logical progression of things. This is an analog to that. If they are told it's, you got to get out, and then the rules are not enforced, do you think they're just going to sit there? No, they're going to try to take a little more. So I think this is a recipe for disaster. We've seen it before. No reason to think it won't happen again.
Eric, what do you see here? I will tell you, as a parent, when you capitulate, when you don't sort of lay down the law, you can't be playing video games till 2:30 in the morning. You can't have ice cream 10 minutes before dinner. If you don't say those things, they'll do it the very next night. I don't think this is that much of a stretch of an analogy. What do you think happens here?
I actually think that University of Toronto, at least right now, is managing this within the best of the degree that they can, watching for security, making sure things actually don't become violent. I mean, protest isn't necessarily supposed to be convenient for people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everywhere has a bylaw or policy that you can't loiter, you can't do that. You know, there is a degree of freedoms that we do have to respect here. But I think at some point, protesters will harm their own movement by angering people, especially if they're not making a convincing argument for why they need to. And I think this is going to play out in that fashion.
Roy, people have wedding ceremonies here at King's College. There's going to be convocation pretty much every day starting in early June, about 3 weeks from now. There's already graffiti on the sidewalks. All the Zionists are racists. Long live the resistance. Go back to Europe. We're just seeing a lot of the same language that we saw at some of the American protests, where eventually it built to a powder keg and then it exploded.
Greg, let's ask some questions here. How many non-students are attending these encampments at universities? Not just in Toronto, but sure, University of Toronto. Who are these people? Where are they from? They're well-organized in Canada. They're well-organized internationally. At U of T, you've got unions present at the encampments, but it goes further than that. There were reports of paid agitators and organizers who traveled from city to city to engage with driving a protest forward, and then once it's established, they move on. This is dominated by vicious Jew hatred and hatred of Israel, with open support for genocide of Jews and support for declared terrorist organizations like Hamas and Hezbollah. By the way, we shouldn't forget, it's a crime in Canada to openly support a terrorist organization, a crime with apparently few consequences. Universities aren't prepared for this. They don't have the stomach for it, and they don't respond with any sense of authority. Similarly, governments inactive way too long because they fear losing votes. Jew hatred is reaching new levels. Look, Iran is offering university attendance free to any anti-Israel, open quote, students, end quote, who may be expelled. This is a recipe that's repeating itself, and if there aren't consequences, you just absolutely know, as you just said, Greg, it's just going to accelerate.
Roy, I kind of think Iran should, we should take Iran up on that. I'd like to see how long that goes, whether kids can make it to class on time, whether they can wear whatever they want,
maybe the women would like it. Yeah, maybe that's a great idea. Sure.
When you watch it, Roy, I'm gonna circle back around the table here, Roy. When you watch it, I've heard people make reference. Well, this is like there's always been protests on college campuses. Very true, absolutely true. But I always felt like it was student driven. We didn't question whether there was some kind of foreign, you know, set of invisible hands funding kids that were protesting Vietnam or protesting civil rights in the 60s. That's not what this is. It really, though, the plight of the Gazans and Palestinians is absolutely worth considering and talking about and holding Israel to account as best we can. But these aren't 1960s style protests we're seeing, Roy.
No, I was a very young man in the 1960s when the college and university protests took place. I saw them, not personally, I wasn't there, but they were on my television screen, and I was already in radio, and I read the reports every day on the air, and we did interviews. This is so different. That was there was also the peace and love generation in the 60s. You know, the hippies, don't get me going on that.
We'll do our own special hippie think tank version later in the summer. I can't wait.
Okay, sure. I'll play. Don't invite me. This is a very, very alarming development. Let's go back to what it is. We talk about, we use all sorts of sanitized phraseology. It's Jew hatred. It's support for genocide. It's open, and it's not dealt with. Universities are not dealing with it. As I said, governments are inactive way too long because they fear losing votes. This is hugely important. And if you support a terrorist organization so declared by our federal government, that's breaking the law. And there's still no consequences. So how does it end?
Eric,
we ask that question. How does it end?
Yeah.
Greg, let me ask a question. How hard would it be for the University of Toronto to send in security forces and simply ask people for their student ID? Hey, are you a student here? And if you're not, get out.
Exactly. You know,
if that's the goalpost, then enforce where the rules are at that goalpost. That's not a hard bar to clear.
No, it really isn't.
And look, let me go back to, if you support a terrorist organization, it's violation of criminal law. We have police in place. We have criminal courts. This is not this is not something that we don't know how to handle or we can't handle. It's something we're refusing to deal with.
Eric, let me get to Eric really quick, Ben.
Sorry.
No, it's good. I'm going to come back to you because I got a really pertinent question for you. Eric, you're 30. I got a kid going onto a university campus next year. So you're a lot closer, like in terms of an age gap, to these circumstances. What do you see? I have to believe there are university students that are smart, they're well-read, but they may want nothing to do with this. They may absolutely have issue with Benjamin Netanyahu, with Israel. Maybe their issue is with other countries in the Arab world. What do you see from some of these kids, you know, 5, 6, 7 years younger than you?
Well, I mean, I think the most important thing to note is that the vast majority of University of Toronto students are not at these protests, and I'm willing to bet a lot of them also disagree with them or find them extremely frustrating in terms of the destruction that it's creating for them. I mean, I think a lot of people can recognize that, you know, the situation in Israel and Palestine and with Gaza is complex, right? Mm-hmm. You know, yes, Hamas is a terrorist organization. That does not mean that you cannot empathize with the plight of the Palestinian people, and I think a lot of people do. You know, I'm a strong supporter of the state of Israel. I think Benjamin Netanyahu has been a really bad leader for Israel through this crisis, and in a lot of ways has diminished, you know, the state's influence in Western world globally with, I think, poor overall justification for every single action. This is to not say that reacting to October 7th was unjustified, but do people question and have the right to whether that's gone too far? I think absolutely. And so I think the, you know, sanity of the masses here isn't really being reflected in what you actually see in the protests.
Ben, when we talk to protesters, when we talk to people who've organized, when we try and provide a voice, and I say to them, name me another group besides the Jews, name me another country, another civilization that we would allow this for, the criticism, China and the Uyghurs, Syria and Bashar al-Assad there. There's Muslims killing Muslims all over the world. People don't seem to care when Arabs kill Arabs when Christians kill Africans or vice versa. They only care if Israel is involved because it involves the Jews. They never have a great answer for me there.
No. The selective nature of the cherry picking of historical touch points demonstrates what Roy's talking about, the inherent Jew hatred of this entire thing. Not a single protest that I saw that made the news when Bashar al-Assad was liquidating Muslims in his own territory. No, we didn't see anything like this because it didn't matter because Jews weren't involved. And look, Harvard University last week came out with their annual study on the values and the issues that are important to sort of the youngest set of Americans. And I believe there's probably an analog in Canada. This issue came out at 15 or 16. And so when you see the amount of protests going on, there's something that doesn't add up. And it goes again back to what Roy said, that this is a well-orchestrated international motivator that's adding kerosene to the fire. And the last thing I would say about this is we're living now in a world where the lesson is the law applies everywhere and evenly unless you have the numbers to disregard it. That's what the lesson is here, that if you have enough people, the law doesn't apply to you. If enough people are loud enough, it doesn't matter. You can do what you want.
Let me get to Eric on this, because I think it also ties into the by-election, Eric. You and I have talked about provincial issues. You know your housing stuff like nobody else. I love talking to you about that and who's doing the right things and who needs to do more of it. But we saw two by-election results in the province last night. Lambton-Kent Middlesex has been a conservative stronghold for a while, but I'm going to tell people that the NDP had a particularly poor result at 10%. The Liberals were at 22. The Conservatives were at 56. But Milton's where I want to crack in on. Heavy Muslim numbers and turnout in Milton. And they voted at 47.5% for the Conservatives, 37.6%. Two things I see there, Eric. One is a bit of a repudiation of the effect that Bonnie Crombie's had as Liberal leader right now. And I also think it's also people saying, you know what? Don't tell us that parental rights aren't a thing. Don't tell us we shouldn't care about our schools. You're wasting our time with fights over whether somebody can wear a keffiyeh somewhere or not. We care about taxes. We care about roads. We care about our infrastructure. We care about jobs. That's what those results told me last night. Do you see it any differently?
What the results tell me is that we have a deeper issue with our democracy when we didn't even get 20% of voters show up in a by-election for the governance of, you know, their region within our province. So I think, you know, this is a repudiation of our provincial politics that is not engaging anyone really at all. And in a by-election, you're really driving numbers. You know, even if you look at like the Tories, right? You know, staffers for the government were asked to take time off to help the Conservative candidate, whereas, you know, you have the Liberals, they're the third place party, they don't really have the same number of resources, right? So, you know, there are a lot of innate advantages to being an incumbent that we also saw reflected in this result.
That's an interesting concept. Roy, I want to ask you about it. You've seen a lot of by-elections in this province. I just feel like we're in a bit of a center-right gravitational pull right now, and it won't last forever, and it didn't start. It hasn't been going on forever. We've probably both got lifelong friends, Roy, that are voting for Pierre next year and maybe Doug again and maybe for the first time ever, but it'll shift back. But the left and left center, to me, has got to stop making the same mistakes about what they think people care about. I think they're in a bit of a bubble right now, and they got to get out of it.
Look, if we didn't have two by-elections and we had a provincial election last night, the voting numbers would be greater, maybe 60%. Unfortunately, that's what normally turns out, both federally and provincially, but the result would be the same. This is just a snapshot of what's going to happen in the next provincial election. And it's a snapshot of what's going to happen in the federal election. The Liberals and the NDP have become synonymous with irritants, with interfering with our lives, with preaching to us, and people don't want that. You can provide me all of your talking points. Mm-hmm. If you're Liberal or NDP, they're no longer listening to you. I spoke with Scott Moe, the Premier of Saskatchewan, last weekend, and the Premier was laughing at Justin Trudeau. Wasn't angry. Well, I guess he was somewhat angry, but he was laughing at him. And I said, Premier, you know, if you're arguing with somebody, if you're challenging each other, then you've got something that's ongoing. You can create a solution, perhaps. But if you're laughing at somebody, baby, it's over. Tune up Willie Nelson.
Yeah. Ben,
again, just very quickly.
Yeah.
These by-elections, they are just a precursor of what's going to happen, both provincially and federally, on a much larger scale.
Ben, in Milton alone, the NDP went from when Kathleen Wynne got swept out, they were at 22.24% for their candidate. They were at 10% in 2022. They were at 6% last night. If you and I went to the NDP offices of Marit Stiles and her senior advisors, what would we tell them about where they're at and what do they need to do? Might have lost Ben briefly. Maybe we did.
I'm here. So Roy said it all. While they're preaching and they're talking about irritants, as he said, you know, look at what the Tories have done. You know, Stephen Lecce's announcement on vaping and cell phones is resonating with voters. Tories announced expanded GO service to Milton, Highway 13. These are things designed to make people's lives better. And again, I go back to what we were talking before. There is a disconnect between the appearance of how important this the issue of the war half a world away is and the lives that we are leading today. I mean, look, we're dealing with, you said it earlier today, that a flight from Buffalo is $500 less for a Canadian than that same flight from Toronto. And WestJet is blaming the carbon tax. So the paradigm is very clear, and the Tories get it. Also, I'd like to add that constantly the left is underestimating how truly, truly popular Doug Ford is. He knows how to connect with voters, and this condescension and this thoughtless underestimation of him is a recipe for staying in opposition for a very long time.
Yeah. And Roy, I know you're watching a lot of the Stanley Cup playoffs. I bring this up because there's a lot of Doug Ford, Bonnie Crombie commercials. She's a friend of Justin Trudeau's. She likes carbon taxes. She's stepping out of a Maserati. Well, the Liberals can complain about that, or they can actually do something about it. Maybe they should spend money on a commercial. Maybe they should try and redefine who Doug Ford is. Because right now, the messaging's only going one way. They need help there.
Yeah, nobody's listening to them. Nobody's listening to them federally. Look, if you go on X/Twitter and you look at anything that's posted supposedly by Justin Trudeau, but it's somebody at the PMO who's doing that, of course, and you look at the responses from people, there he's ridiculed, he's attacked. Nobody's listening anymore. Nobody pays attention to them. They've been in our faces far too long. People want the government to provide service, to pragmatically manage affairs. Don't tell us how to live our lives. And that's what they've been trying to do. And that's where the pushback comes. Watch the provincial election next time around. Watch the upcoming federal election. What you saw last night, again, is a microcosm of what we'll see on the larger stage.
I want to get a quick 30, 40 seconds from you, Eric, on Crombie and the Liberals. It's not a great start. What do they need to do to reevaluate? You like what they're doing with housing. They should be getting more of that out, shouldn't they?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple of things. I mean, I think the first one is, you know, they have this big weight of an unpopular federal government around them. And, you know, I think especially in Ontario, people really don't distinguish between brands at the provincial and the federal level because there is so much crossover in people, et cetera. So, you know, I don't see the Ontario Liberals getting much of a hearing from the public until Justin Trudeau is frankly gone. And so, you know, some of this is just a time piece. I think the other piece is people don't really know who Bonnie Crombie is yet. I don't think they've done a lot of, you know, outbound, you know, brand building for her in particular. And I think a lot of the opposition towards Doug Ford has not necessarily been substantive. You know, they want people to think he's, you know, this really bad guy, but he's actually, you know, kind of like, you know, the neighborhood dad down your street, you know, you'll go over for a barbecue once a summer. So I think people underestimate Ford's charm. I don't think he's undefeatable. I think, you know, the Liberals really need to understand what their brand is going to be provincially and how different that needs to be from what the federal government is right now.
Yeah, and it's worth pointing out, by 2026, they're probably they probably don't have that gorilla on the back, which is a Liberal federal government, and they can play a little bit of a counter game as opposed to carrying them right now. I got to leave it there, guys. Really do appreciate it, Roy. I'll be listening tomorrow. Ben, I'll be listening tomorrow morning as well. Thanks for this.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening to the Toronto Today podcast. We drop the highlights of The Daily Show every weekday morning at 11 a.m. Don't forget, you can hear the entire show on the radio, at home, on your smart speaker. Ask Alexa or say, hey, Google, play 640 Toronto or Toronto Today. You can hear us on between 5:30 and 9 weekdays on 640 Toronto. Have a great day.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.